Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. At the top of a recent narrative writing assignment, my son's teacher prompted her eighth grade students with this thought. Writing is discovery. You need to trust your own instincts and ask questions that will help you dig deep enough. You need to become a preschooler again, filled with curiosity and questions. Joining me today to discuss why we abandon the preschooler inside us to begin with and help us help our children and grandchildren avoid that mistake themselves is Mimi Chenfeld, acclaimed author and educator. She loves to talk about creative education, and we love to talk to her about it. Mimi has written several books for teachers, Teaching in the Key of Life and Teaching by Heart among them. The titles themselves should give you an idea of what she's about, namely the children. Mimi travels the country to talk with educators of every stripe about teaching creatively. A native New Yorker, she has been settled in Central Ohio for many years, lucky us, teaching college students and working teachers alike about the art of teaching children. Mimi, welcome.
Thank you, Anne.
I know you've got a little frog, or as you said,
frog. I brought a little frog just for discovery's purposes.
How does it feel to have a frog in your throat?
And you know, the kids take things very literally. Well, you know, you talk about the little ones. So if you say, I have a frog in your throat, little kids will just like, wow, there is a frog.
Can
you
know, we see?
What was the book? There was a wonderful book called, it was about all the expressions we use that are just, you know, not to be taken literally, like there's a fork in the road.
Right.
And, you know. And it was a wonderful book. I just wish I could remember it. I'll think of it during the play. But kids take all those expressions, the little ones, completely, literally.
It was sort of a great day when I finally got the point across to my child about, it's just an expression. And then it was sort of a sad day, too.
Because they lost something.
Right.
Because they were waiting, you know. Like, they're waiting. And one of the cutest things I ever heard was talking about kids with their teeth falling out, you know, first graders.
Yeah.
And they always have to tell you a tooth story, always have to. And so finally, one little girl said, Mimi, I had a tooth that fell out too. I said, wow. I said, what happened? She says, I put it under my pillow. And I said, and then what happened? She says, and I got a dollar. And I said, who gave you the dollar? And she said, the truth fairy.
The truth fairy.
I loved it. See, I love, you know, kids, you know, play with expressions, because the way they hear them. Another one that a little one told me years ago, which I still to this day, I use all the time. I can't get over it. I can't stop it. We were doing a story about animals, and I said, hey, guys, did we leave any animals out of our story? And this one little four-year-old goes, man, we left out chickmunks. And to this day, chickmunks is making more sense to me than chipmunks. Every time I see it, I still say chickmunks. So in case a regular civilian meets me, they go like, oi.
Mine's windshield. I have many, but... windshield factor instead of windshield factor.
Windshield
factor. It just made sense to me is how fast the wind is hitting your windshield.
It's perfect. Oh, no, I think this is going to join chickmunks.
Chickmunks. You know, going back to that eighth grade narrative writing assignment, I do wonder. I mean, she's asking kids, a lot of kids, just to go back and be a preschooler again, especially when you're a cool eighth grader. How do you do that? Can we go back again, or is it too late, or do you just have to work harder when they're young and hope for the best?
Well, let's just say go back is kind of a strange idea because, you know, what we would hope is that imagination and the curiosity and the excitement of learning is part of you. What you experience, we hope, as a preschooler, but of course the way the country is messing up even that. It's not something you go back to, but stays with you so that you always have. You know, I was talking to my dear friend, who you probably know, Marlene Robbins, who teaches at Indianola. She teaches movement. It's the Arts Impact. Now it's K-8. It's one of the treasures of the Columbus Public Schools. And somebody gave her all these Beanie Babies. And she had, you know, like 30 Beanie Babies that somebody gave her just to use. So she had them all, you know, bordering her room, and she was going to use them for the kindergarten kids. And the fifth graders saw the kindergarten kids with them, and the fifth graders came in, by the way, very cool, you know, we are now cool.
Right.
You know, she's had them since kindergarten, but we are now, you know, pre-puberty. Our glands, you know, our hormones, our glands are screwing us up. We're cool. The culture is, you know, starting to affect us. We're cool. And so they came in cool, and so she started, you know, trying to warm them up, and they were, like, resisting. You know, she started to do her playful, creative things with them. They're resisting. And finally she was like, what's wrong with you guys? What's going on? What happened to you? What happened to you over the summer? And they were just like arms folded, giving her the little narrow look, you know, that we all know so well, know and love so well.
Oh, it's very sad.
Yo, yo, mom, get lost, you know. Anyway, so she just said, wait a minute. So she got out the Beanie Babies that were for the kindergarten kids, and she threw each one a Beanie Baby. And for the next hour, the kids were like, oh, my gosh, the band. They were throwing them and dancing with them. And she used them to warm them up, and they adored it. So I see they're still in them as against going back. And I know it sounds like a
weird— But they needed a prop.
Yeah, they needed the freedom of, you know, of it's okay. It's okay. But you know, the idea that the teacher almost said go back to when you were. I mean, the great people I know, it's still in them. That the spark, that fun, the playfulness, the willingness to try something new, the openness, you know, those are the qualities that little ones have. And the innocence kind of, and the wonder, not wonder bread, you know,
uh-huh.
And joy, not a dishwashing liquid, you know. So I think that we all have it in us, and it's almost to draw on it and to, you know, reach in and honor it.
It's sort of like a muscle, isn't it?
It's like a spirit muscle.
If you don't exercise it,
oh yeah,
you forget what it feels like.
Oh, absolutely. I say that to when I you know, I work with all ages of kids, and you can see you can literally see the difference when, you know, the kindergartners come in, you know, first grade a little, you know, now a little more inhibited, second grade, you know, a little slumpy shoulders, a little more worried, little third grade, you know, real, like, kind of solitary, coming in, sit, listen, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, oh my God, you know, oh my, they just, you know, I'd call them Pompeii, the lava hit, you know. And they're, you know, yo, what are you doing? This is not cool. We're not going to do it with you. What are you, weird? And then, of course, you do something really fun and weird. They go, can we do that again? But you've got to believe that that's what's going to happen, because they can intimidate you. They can blow you
even
over.
You?
Like, not me, because okay. I'm too obnoxious. I am so obnoxious. I mean, I am like the poster child for an obnoxious educator.
To a kid. Maybe,
I will not let a kid intimidate. I mean, little ones now can intimidate. We have preschool kids who are video kids who've seen everything. They know everything. They can flick their Twitter and twat and quack and all those tweets and all that stuff. They all know all that. So here you are trying to keep that joyfulness and playfulness and innocence and simple things to be the wonderful things, because the simplest things are the best. And they're, like, already losing some of that. Many of them are losing it. So we have a challenge.
We're not going to be able to go backwards when it comes to technology and what kids are exposed to. It's just not going to happen. But have you found any creative ways to teach with technology?
You mean using technology?
Yes.
Oh, Anne. Anyone listening who knows me knows what a cave person I am.
Well, I know that, and I've read your books, and I know that, but I wonder, even if it's about how you talk about it.
I sort of avoid talking about it.
Because I just did some taboo.
And you know why? Because they get it. 95% of their life is technology. So to have the one few minutes with somebody who's not talking about it,
right.
I think is, you know, I have this book called Creative Experiences for Young Children that Heinemann published. It's been doing really well. And they wanted me to do like a little section on technology. And I basically said, I don't do Windows, you know, I don't do technology. That's been done. That's out there in numerous choices. You can, you know, can booklets and pamphlets and media coverage, that's covered. These are the things that are really forgotten.
You know, I grew up without computers, though. I grew up, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have any of that stuff and didn't even imagine it. It was something like, I remember that Walter Cronkite's The 21st Century. you kind of looked at it that way. However, I didn't feel like my education was as creatively done as my son's.
Now, with the technology. Listen, I'm very – let me just say this.
Well, not with the technology, but in spite of it.
Well, but – and I let me just, you know, cover my tushy here.
I don't think you're anti.
No, because, you know, I'm not against using – I mean, the kids use it phenomenally. I mean, they use it for papers and projects. They use the laminate. They hit different keys and books come out. They do their projects and they have a collage of images. They do phenomenally on it, and I am for that. I am not teaching it, but I'm for it. I think it's wonderful. And when I see what they've done with it, I'm very encouraging. I'm like awestruck. I'm like, oh, my, Brian, this is just – and I'm not kidding – I think it's just fantastic. I personally have my tambourine, have my music, have my dance, have one puppet, have I don't have all the beanie, but have one puppet, have a walk, have a talk, have an idea, have a story. That's where I am. And very simple things, simple. I know it sounds crazy, but 'tis a gift to be simple is like one of my favorite. I think the ordinary into the extraordinary is one of the, you know, definitions also of creativity. Taking something ordinary and turning it into something extraordinary in any way you do it, whether it comes out as a dance or as an amazing technological, you know, discovery that you put together. That's okay, however you do it.
When over the years did it all of a sudden occur to you, or maybe it didn't all of a sudden, but you saw that this computer thing, the handhelds, that whole thing was going to get to be an issue. I wasn't in education. I sort of overlapped that stuff. I didn't get into it myself, but I saw my kid do it, and it kind of sneaks up on you.
Oh, my grandchildren. Oh, my gosh. I mean, when it first came out, I realized that this is, you know, oops, this is something that's happening. I think I wrote an article about 15 years ago that I'd rather have a lap than a laptop, and I'd rather eat an apple than an apple. You know, I think I wrote one of my little, you know, oh, isn't she too cute? But I meant, I think a kid would rather have a lap than a laptop, you know. In many cases, we need the laps more than the laptops. And we need to really eat apples more than, oh, well.
A day.
So much
a day.
For lightning striking the forces sent to it tomorrow.
We're going to take a quick break right now. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Be right back.
At Talk of the Nation, we want to know what you're really talking about. I'm Neil Conan. Visit our blog and let us know what's the talk at your dinner table or at the company water cooler. Go to the talk of your nation at npr.org/blogofthenation and join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is coming up today at 2 here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Emma Fett, in for Amy Jurevich this week. Should be a beautiful day today, sunny with a high around 83 degrees. Currently it's 70 out. Tomorrow will follow today's example, mostly sunny and a high around 82. Wednesday should be a bit more mild, a bit more like fall, partly cloudy, and a high somewhere around 76 degrees. Now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Mimi Chenfeld, author and educator. She loves creative learning. She's the best. And you wanted to make one more point about technology.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, continuing just our little discussion, the thing that hits me the most, one of the most hitting parts of this, is that no matter what you have, it's going to be extinct in about a month because something better is going to come out, something faster, smaller. I mean, now these chips, I mean, they're walking around your whole life on a fingernail. You know, I mean, it's like unbelievable. To me, it's overwhelming. I mean, I like paper. I like my typewriter. You know, I like my quill. I like my cuneiform tablets. I like my drums and my smoke signals. You know? I like yodeling from mountain to mountain. You know, but I do think that that's sort of something that makes us unsatisfied. Because if you got this wonderful machine and it's doing everything you could possibly want, and then somebody says, you know, you need to get a new one. You need to update. And it's like, whoa, where does it end? You know, soon we won't have to do. And I think in this whole age of communication, people don't really communicate. You know, my mother, bless her dear heart, would always say when she heard of a new, you know, invention, new technology, she'd say, is the world any better? She'd do her little, is the world any better because of this? And I'm not sure it's better. I think more people are more aware and they're communicating around the world. And that part is good. You know, I would never put that down. And people who are, what do you call that, psyching or sicking or something, they look at
sinking.
Each other.
Mm-hmm.
Sing. And that's nice. People are so spread out and they can see each other. Sometimes they don't
want to
see.
Oh, Skyping.
Yeah, Skyping.
Right.
They don't want to see each other. See, and every time you learn a new term, you know, I said to my son, how do you know when something is over? He says, when you get it, Mom, it's over. It's true.
How does it feel to be a standard bearer?
I'm back there, you know.
In 1993, in your book, Teaching in the Key of Life, you wrote that you were worried that parents were trying to program their children, speaking of computers, for success and sometimes even in the womb. And why did that concern you? And does it still concern you? Do you think people are—
More than ever.
Really, more than ever.
Worse and more intense. Yikes. Our kids are—I have never—this is my 53rd year in education. Believe it or not, and I'm staying in it till I get it right.
Spring chicken.
No, people said, are you going to retire? When are you going to stop? I said, when people tell me not to come in anymore. I think they told me, but I didn't quite hear them. So here I am. But you know what? I've never seen kids, little ones, stressed and harassed and anxious and worried and sleepless. Little ones, and we won't even go. I'm doing a big article for the Reading Association now on how are we going to keep teachers in this time of testing and assessing and pushing and, you know, first and second grade curriculum coming down on the little ones, and kindergarten is no longer a garden of children. I have an article called Handcuffed in a Garden of Thorns because I think we're killing our little ones.
I love the kid who, after his first day in kindergarten, I can't remember. It was in one of your stories about came out and said, you know, this is not what I signed up for.
I'm glad you reminded me of
something like that. Yeah.
Oh no, the kid is I think in first grade.
Yeah.
And he went to get his coat.
That's right.
He went to get his jacket to go home after lunch, before lunch. And the teacher said, this is a true story. What are you doing, honey? He said, oh, I'm going home. She says, no, dear, you don't get to go home now. We stay all day. And he said, we stay all day. And truly, this is what he said. Well, who the hell signed me up for that?
That's right. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, this is a true one. I've just met a friend whose daughter is getting married. And when her daughter, this is how far back I go, her daughter was in kindergarten. This is now why. The daughter's like 24. So this has got to be over 15 years ago. And her daughter said to her mom, Mom, are we going to get to play in kindergarten? And her mom said, well, probably not as much as you'd like to. But you're probably going to have a little more work. And she said, well, I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to do all that paperwork. This is a little one. And so the kids
she
are doing
knows,
paperwork.
They know.
It's the opposite of how little kids learn. Little kids don't learn, you know, some of them may, but most of them do not learn sitting down for hours at doing seat work with formalized, structured lessons. We know that, but we're doing it. Because now we're testing them, and now they're going to have no child, all children left behind, you know, and all that.
Right.
Sorry about that. Freudian slip.
All children. If you'd like to join the conversation with Mimi Chenfeld, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Andy, got a comment?
How you doing today?
Good.
Hi,
days.
Andy.
This is a great show. I've got a 3.5-year-old at home who has all the wonderful sayings that you guys have been saying this morning. The book that you were referring to is called More Body Parts, about all the different phrases. My nose is running, my ears. A fantastic book. It's one of three in the series. I know this because we read it every night.
And isn't it wonderful?
It's just fantastic. I mean, there's nothing better than having him sit on my lap at night reading the book and just watching his face just light up with it. I mean, it's fantastic. The one thing I do want to say, and you hit a point, which is, you know, they're teaching all these kids in kindergarten like they were in college or something. And I remember when I was in kindergarten, you know, we had our nap time, we had play time, we had show and tell. And my wife's a first grade teacher, and they do none of that anymore. And it's disheartening to see what they're doing to these little kids. I think I turned out all right. I think everybody in my generation has turned out pretty good. I mean, we didn't invent the internet, but I mean, we came pretty close to perfecting what we've got out there now. It's not that we grew up dumb. And why are they trying to change it all?
Andy, you have hit such a nerve. You did right that with that last comment. You've just hit what's going on in this country for whatever reason. And I can, you know, it's almost like suddenly it's the way it is. You know what I mean? I think it had to do with the testing thing. I think it had to do with the assessment thing. I think it had to do with people wanting an immediate report of how their kids are doing and how dumb they are, smart they are, how the school ranks with other schools. I mean, I think our need for statistics, I think it has to do with statistics of two, just overwhelmed everything else. And exactly what you were saying about kindergarten when you went to school, that is what kindergarten should be. That is what it is. And when we take, you know, I was in the dentist. This is the beginning of my article for the Reading Association. I was in the dentist's office about a week, 2 weeks ago, and the lovely dental hygienist, you know, had her stuff in my mouth and everything. And, you know, you can't really talk. You know,
but why do they ask you questions?
Yeah, no,
okay, that's another topic.
Exactly.
Another
you're going, But anyway, she also was telling me while she was doing my teeth, so I really couldn't speak, and she didn't know how much deeply I was involved in education. And she was telling me that she was a volunteer in a kindergarten class once a week as a, you know, community person volunteering to help. And she loved the kids, but she quit. And I went, why did you quit? I'm kind of with my mouth full of stuff. Why did you quit? And she said, I quit because I could not bear what they were doing to the children. They were sitting, and this is this paper, underline this. This is how you do it, and it's wrong, and it's right. And a few kids just freaked out. She said one little boy went under his table, his desk, and was shaking and crying and wouldn't come out because he was so worried that he got it wrong. So I'm starting my article with that. What are we doing to the children? So they need, Andy, they need your voice. Letters to the editor, you know, calls to a school and say, my kid needs to play. This, you know, play is the way young children learn. Play isn't frivolous. Play is their basic activity, and it's filled with many, many layers of learnings and comprehension and sharing and cooperation and everything you can imagine with play. But I think you're right on, and they need your voice. Don't let things go by without commenting, calling, and just being an advocate.
Lawmakers say that it's because for accountability, that they keep shoveling out all this money out to the school districts, and particularly back at since 1991 when the case first emerged, suggesting the claim that our school funding system is unconstitutional in the state of Ohio. They started to fix it and tinker with it at that point. And one of the things they did was bring in the heavier testing loads for accountability purposes. It feels like they're turning the kids into some kind of commodity. Like there's a
the language
stamp
is all
it,
the business.
Good housekeeping stamp of approval when they get out of the fourth grade because they passed their Ohio achievement test.
But it wasn't just Ohio, Ann.
It's
all over.
It's all over the country.
So whatever happened, and the people, and they're very intimidating. You know, first of all, let me give you just a quick example. All the reading research says that no one method works for all kids. No one method, no matter how great the method is. So here would be whole states adopting one method and one way of teaching reading. And they know that it's not going to be successful with all, so they've already doomed kids to fail. and teachers to be pressured to use that when they know this kid is so interested in rockets. Oh, my God, I can get this kid reading if you just let me have the time to work with him in something that he's interested in. And this kid, if I just do something with animals, that kid is going to be my kid. I mean, so they don't give you the chance to be a creative teacher, a teacher who's joyful and excited and shares enthusiastically with the children. Here's your script. Here's the way we do it. Here's an irrelevant material for them to read. Has nothing to do with their lives. What is that about? So I'm, you know, I'm like you're screaming hysterical, but good thing I have a sore throat now because, you know, Andy, are you still there?
No, he's off. Andy, but he's out there somewhere
Andy,
listening,
you're
I hope.
Good, and we need you, Andy.
You said that children are complex beings in the state of becoming as we all are, which kind of gave me hope if it's what I think you meant by that. What did you mean by that, as we all are in the state of becoming?
Well, everyone, you know, Michelangelo's motto at 89 was, I am still learning. You know, we get smug. We get smug and we go like, I already know. I knew this. Oh, we already did this. Oh, so we close up. And you can't close up because, there's always more to learn. I have this four little rules of creativity and my own little, I call my four nudgies. And the first one is what else?
What else?
What else? The minute you say what else, your mind is open. It's like aerobics for the brain. And I've tried to share this with teachers to spread with to their kids. So it isn't like, Anne, I really like your composition, but I'm really disappointed that you didn't do enough. I think you could really... I'm surprised that it was so minimal.
Instead of
saying, "And what else can you add to this that would really zap it and make it really, you know, zing it? You know, what else did you think of another component? When you say what else, your brain, you know, what else can you think of about summer? You gave me 10 summer words. Can you give me, what else? Can you give me 10 other summer words? I mean, it's a way of thinking. It's not a formula. I don't do strategies. I don't do formulas. It's just like a way of thinking. And if you think that way, so what else is one? What if? The words of imagination. What if? Someone said, what if instead of a rainforest poster from Scholastic, what if we turn our whole room into a rainforest? And we do rainforest stories and rainforest books, and we just become the, you know, what if imagination? What if you could communicate with your ancestors? What if you could, you knew, understood the language of animals? What if? Then this, wow, imagination. And the third one is show the idea.
Show, don't tell.
Show, don't tell. Well, tell is one way of showing, okay. One. But show the idea. There's like 100 ways to show an idea. And so why do we only pick one way that doesn't work for all kids? And then the kids are dumb, and they got to get on Ritalin, and they're ADD, whatever, you know, DA, you know.
ADHD.
ADA, SNM, I don't know what the heck they are. Whatever initial is in now. So.
And then the fourth?
And the fourth is fake it.
Fake it?
Fake it. If you can't do it, just do it. This is I am still learning. I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, I know how that feels.
You're
listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. It's All Sides with Ann Fisher. Give us a call at 614-292-8513. We're not ready for a break yet, but if you'd like to talk to us, give us a call or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So we're all in a state of learning. This isn't
yes.
all just about kids.
Oh,
we
no.
can all benefit
absolutely.
From this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't you think? I mean, I think it's wonderful.
Well, you hear folks say that, oh, I'm too old. I can't learn that anymore. Oh, I'm too old to go back to school. I'm too old to do this. I'm too old to change careers. I'm too old to that. I don't understand that. I'll never understand that. You hear that a lot.
Well, but that's because they got themselves into a state where they believe that. You know, but if you just look around, I mean – you know, just look at the people you know who say, I'm going to start piano. I'm going down to the Cultural Arts Center and take a sketch class. I've always wanted to. I'm going to start a journal. I'm going to learn how to use a computer. I'm taking that class. I mean, these are people starting, you know, a new day every day is something possible that they haven't done before. And that's what I mean by becoming.
There's a lot of folks getting laid off right now in their 50s. Or a little older, or maybe a little younger, be that as it may, they feel very trapped, like they can't move on and do something else. And that's pretty sad because things aren't coming back the way they were. We have to rethink it. But they've been taught to just stick with one path.
That's right. Those days are over, I think. What was the statistic last week that people, you know, from now on are going to have at least 3 or 4 different careers in their lifetime? And I think, you know, in a way it's exciting. And right now it's shaky and people are worried and anxious, right, and they need to be. But, you know, maybe out of this will come a stronger feeling of self and a confidence that I can do something I didn't think I could do before. I mean, I think, you know, I think there's a lot of possibilities in that for growth.
The testing mentality that's kind of gripped the educational system, we touched on that a little bit earlier. I wanted to talk about that a little bit more because, you know, you're good at thinking outside the box and the tests are here. And I know that things may change down the road, but it's sort of like term limits. You know, they're going to be here for a while now. And do you see any value for the testing at all? Do you see or any better way to do the testing?
And those tests started out when they first introduced, you know, the widespread tests in fourth grade and then I think it was eighth grade, whatever.
Right.
They started out to be one way of finding out if kids needed help in some area. That was the original purpose. Gosh, we need to find out, gee, math is your area you need more help in. Your child is wonderful in language and reading, but math is a little, or you know, whatever. And they were supposed to be an indication where a child might need extra help or intervention, etc. That's how they started. And one indication of how a kid was doing, one, it turned out to be the be-all and the end-all. So you ask me, I feel if they went back to that original idea, fine. Keep it as one measurement, but not
Well, then they started comparing them between schools and then districts, and the competition was on.
Well, and then it was everything was based on it. Everything, you know, I have a friend, he's going to be in this article too. He's in Florida, and he did the, commentary over the phone that I got in the dentist's office, the same thing. He teaches kindergarten. He's in a district in Florida. He has one child who speaks English as a home language. Mm-hmm. The others, most of them are bilingual or Spanish in his class, kindergarten. Every one of them has to be tested, and every one of the tests is going to bring down the school. Bring down the school. So it's from all the layers of the school are hit by the stress. The principal is saying, my school oh my gosh, my school is just going to be this failure and be in PR. We're going to be this, they're going to change our staffs. They're going to say we're doing a terrible job. And they don't credit. Say you're a teacher and your kids come in. Say you're a third grade teacher, your kids come in, many of them on a first grade reading level. The whole year you get them up to second grade, they move a year. You are still a crappy teacher because they didn't get up to grade. You don't get credit for the improvement
you did.
Made.
Yeah. We're going to take a break now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I listen to NPR every day. It gives us insight into why people do what they do and have a passion for it. We hear from people in their words, and it's not the reporters telling us what this and that person said, whether it's about the economy in the United States or the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm Bethany Donnell, and WOSU is my source for in-depth reporting in a soundbite age.
Good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Coming up next hour, Ann talks with NPR correspondent Tom Jelton about the modern history of Cuba from the perspective of a prominent pre-revolutionary business family that continued a bitter fight with Castro in exile. Hang around for that conversation coming up in just about 20 minutes. It's a nice day today, sunny with a high around 83. Currently it's 73 degrees. Tomorrow's looking similar to today, mostly sunny with a high around 82. Wednesday should be more mild, high around 76, and partly cloudy. Support WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer today. WOSU is currently looking for a daytime volunteer to assist with the administration of the volunteer program. You must be computer proficient and may go through an application and interview process. For more information on this and other volunteer opportunities, visit us online at WOSU.org/volunteers. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today, I'm talking with Mimi Chenfeld. She's an acclaimed author, educator. She goes all over the place telling people how to teach kids creatively. And it's not just about kids. It's about grown-ups, too. We were talking about testing, the pros and the cons. And apparently, there are no pros unless you're using it to understand better what the child needs to learn better on an individual basis. But once it becomes a tool for comparison and a tool for promotion, that's...
It becomes a weapon instead of a tool. And right now, I think it's a weapon. And it's when I go around the country, and I have been very, very lucky because I've been in 47 states. But when I go around the country, when we're together, we have a wonderful time. But when teachers are telling me their stories, it's like the Civil War wounded, you know, like Walt Whitman going through the wounded in the Civil War. Because there are so many teachers on the verge of quitting. They can't stand to be so confined that they have to teach to the test. They have to follow a strict curriculum that doesn't leave room for children's interests, for their own way of teaching, and that could possibly reach more children than they reach. So they're saying, this isn't why I'm teaching. But anyway, I want to make one other point quick. And that is also we're stuck in a culture where product is product. What is the product? You know, so you can't just write a poem. You have to enter it in a contest, and it's up there in a winner and a loser. You can't take a walk. They put your miles up on a bulletin board of how much you walked, and you're walking for a cause. You can't just say, let's take a walk and talk. Let's just play with clay. You know, boys and girls, we're going to have clay, but we have an exhibit coming at 2 o'clock, so could you get your things ready? Oh, Anne, I don't think yours is ready for an exhibit, dear. Yeah. Oh, Michelangelo, I really think you need to do more work with marble, darling. And Vincent, those stars really look a little weird, those swirly stars. And please don't cut off your ear, Vincent, please. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Process. The fun of doing for its own sake. We've lost a lot of that because we're in classes. You know, a little kid who can't even walk, she's still in Pampers, goes to ballet, and, you know, first you buy the tutu and then you get the tickets for the recital. Honey, wait, she just learned to walk and she's not toilet trained yet. Why am I selling tickets to her recital? So we don't get the kids the joy of the doing, just the fun of doing
without the pressure. Of producing.
Right. And all little kids think now they can write, they have a book. You know, we just make the book. They write the, oh my God, that is the most wonderful book, darling. So the kid is 3. So by the kid is 5, he gets a rejection. You know, he throws up and he throws himself under a table and he doesn't know how to handle it. You know, I have 2 words. How come? The dog. Why is that not a good book? I'm really bad. I told you I'm obnoxious.
We've got an email from Bob. He says, teaching for tests seems more like repeating already reported answers rather than posing questions that challenge knowledge. This seems more risky for teachers as well as society, especially at a time when we desperately need to get beyond limits of established knowledge.
Yay, Bob.
Okay, what's he talking about there?
Bob, you just said it's not Bob. Oh, he's not on.
No, it's on
so
email.
So you use technology. Now we can hear your golden voice.
But we know you're out there, Bob. Thank you for the email.
You said it perfectly. Because, you know, it's what do you learn and how do you learn? So the testing is not like, when is the war in 1812? Okay, so much for that. You just got it right, you know. What color was Picasso's blue, period, you know. Okay, so you learn facts that may or may not be relevant in your life and you give them back. That's just one, you know, like component of like kind of rote learning. And how many tests have you and I taken where we got a terrific mark and somebody said, what was the test about? I go, damn if I know. I don't know any. If I had to take it again, I'm finished. But there are people who do learn that way. So because we all learn differently. So I'm not saying that some people won't learn. et cetera, and know it, you know, 10 years from now. But I don't call that real learning, and I don't call teaching that way creatively.
How do you even teach for a test? How do you do it?
Well, you know how some, when I, you know, I started teaching in New York, and we had nothing like the testing now. But I basically said, kids, we're going to have these tests in April. And right before the test, we're going to get really ready. And until then, we're going to have the best time we ever had in our lives. And like the week before, we're still going to have a great time. And I really need you to be together. And then we'll really prepare for the test. You know.
That's
how I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to do it. You know, I had to make a compromise. But I said, we're going to have the win. But what's going on now is there are kids started the first day and the test stuff came back. They're starting the first day to bring, because so much hangs on it. You know, funding and success and acclaim.
Humility.
Humility, yeah. And embarrassment and, you know, teachers feeling like they're inadequate and how come my kids didn't. And there are people who just can't take tests. You know, they're not. I'm terrible. I mean, you just give me three possibilities and I'll go, I don't like any of those possibilities. So I'm going to fail that. You know. None of the above. You know.
Yes, yeah, some people do well with essays. Other people do well with multiple guesses, I call them.
That's very good.
Other people do good with fill in the blanks or circle the right answer.
And some people do good by just walk along and tell me you know this. Turn it into a song. Sing it. Listen, we learned all of us learn religion through music. We can learn a lot using song. I don't understand why this is a big deal. You know, they go, what a concept. I'm like, hello, it's so old. It's like only about 10,000 years old.
It's kind of interesting when they talk about making cuts in school. It's usually, as you know, it's to the arts.
The arts. Oh, please.
Yeah, it's always because that is not considered necessary. So what do you think about?
I think the arts,
I know you think they should be in the schools.
I think the arts are the heart of learning.
Have we done anything by siphoning them off into one room in the school and making that art class? Has that created part of the problem?
I think that's what's cut. That's when they cut it, they have something to cut.
Right.
If the arts were part of everything, you know, there are cultures that have no word for art because the arts are part of everything. So, in other words, in these cultures, you know, who do you have for art? What room are you in for art? They just go, what do you mean? Because the arts are part, put a P in front of it, part of everything. Mm-hmm. And so you have your seasons and you have certain songs and rituals and celebrations and designs and symbols for the season or for birth and death and marriage. I mean, it's just part of or growing, you know, harvest has its own, you know, configuration of colors and songs. So the arts are part of dances and celebrations, a part of the life of the people. We separate it, and so it makes it an easier target. We don't see, you know, when I teach a course every summer called Arts Across the Curriculum at Otterbein, and whatever you're teaching, the arts are part of it. And if you can, but we're not there, because then they couldn't cut it, because it's the way you teach as part of it, you know. So you take your reading, take your studying the Civil War in history. So you can just do, here's the book, here's the test, here's the Civil War, here's the battles, here's the fight. You can do that. What else? Here are the songs that were sung by both sides. Here are letters that we wrote. Here were the sketchbook that were found. Here is a time machine. You are there. Tell us, you sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. What was it like? Here's the red badge of courage. You know, he never went to war, but he could imagine it. And so, you know, so the arts come in. All the time, symbols, you know.
You made me think of something I want to get back to about Egyptian hieroglyphics and ancient communication. But before we do, I want to let you know that you can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU 820. I'm going to take a call now from Perry. Are you there?
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Perry.
Hi. I want to talk about teacher performance for pay. There's a lot of controversy about that, but I want to give you my observation about professional performance. One of the great things I appreciate in working with the best law firms and the best accounting firms in this city is when you go in there, I mean, these are the top four. The air is rich with professionalism. These are the best people. They own or interview the first three grads of every school. And when you deal with the best professionals in town, you really have to be on your toes. It's an atmosphere of, I expect perfection and maybe an improvement on that. Well, teachers have not really been raised in that kind of environment. And it is the expectation that drives this great performance. And so naturally, these other professions excel in pay ranges and accomplishments, achievement, rewards of all kinds. Now, teaching is a profession that, like any profession, you really improve yourself. You strive for perfection, for better performance every day. And you want to learn how to do your skill better. And you even compete with other professionals. But they've been so defensive for so long. They work for bureaucrats who are not educated. And they've just formed a defensive attitude, and they've not had a chance to really be perform as professionals.
Okay, hey, Perry, let Mimi talk about that issue. And Mimi speaks all over the country to teachers. What do you
Perry,
think?
Perry, I think maybe you'll agree with me or not. I think teachers have been the target of a lot of criticism of, all kinds of things going on in the country. Teachers get blamed. They have a history of being at the core of the blame. If it weren't for the teachers, these kids would be this. So there is, I do think that there is a defensiveness of teachers and a feeling like they are blamed for all the ills of society, the easiest. I think the professions you talked about are a lot easier to look professional.
And you don't have.
And it's a lot easier to look like a professional person with, desks and more formal attire and a quieter atmosphere. And, we're talking about children and groups. And when you go into a school, I can go into school and say, this is a phenomenal teacher. And you would just, be on your knees going, yes. I think that it's easier in the professions you talked about to look professional and have the smell of professional expertise there. But I think teaching really is a special profession, and I think it's as close to a sacred religious calling than any other profession I know. I believe it's a calling, and I don't think it's as easy to compare like medical or law professions to teaching, because first of all, if you went into a school and, when a kid is throwing up and the teacher's singing a song so that nobody makes fun of the kid while she's cleaning it up, you're going to go like, look at this. What kind of a profession is this? But this is the life of teachers. It's not the same as the life of lawyers or doctors or accountants. And I think the people who are part of that profession, most of them, are very committed, and they are very professional.
Do you want to hear from some people who love their schools?
Yeah.
Okay. How about Jan? You want to talk about the perfect teacher your son had?
Hi. Actually, my son was lucky to go mostly to good schools, but when he was in kindergarten, he did not want to learn to read, and he's very hands-on. And he just made up his mind he wasn't going to learn to read, but he was into space. And he had, I hope this teacher is listening, because I hope she would recognize herself. She changed the curriculum for everyone to study space. And not only did my son immediately learn to read, but the children built a spaceship. And they did plays, and they created, they did aliens. I mean, all of them got into it. As a result, I kept him in a private school that I was taken out of because I knew he would have this teacher again. She was fabulous.
That's
unfortunately, she's no longer there.
Jan, it's a perfect example of what we're talking about. Thank you so much. And you see the result of a child who was, negative and rejecting, who suddenly became excited and involved and learned.
Here's another one. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I don't know whether you guys have ever heard about a school within the Upper Arlington City Schools called Wycliffe Progressive.
Oh, of course.
I have not.
Yes. It's a wonderful school.
my kids are there, and I'll tell you what, I just can't say enough about the program. It is just absolutely fabulous. And the previous caller talked about a teacher changing the curriculum. That's exactly something that would happen at Wycliffe. And they had a grant to work with Harvard. I think we worked for 3 years with Harvard on group learning.
They just got it extended, hon.
Yes, we're doing a dissemination grant now, and we're going to try to teach that to other districts. But and I got to tell you a story. When we started looking, my oldest is a sophomore in high school now, and when we started looking at the schools in the Arlington district for kindergarten, you know, when she was going into kindergarten, we went to Wycliffe, and I said to my husband, "I want my kids to go to this school," and he said, "Oh, you know, I'm not interested in this. We just want the traditional learning." And he said, "I'll give you 1 year." I have four children. My last one just started kindergarten there, and we've never looked back. And he said to me, he's a college professor, and he said what he loves about Wycliffe is it teaches critical thinking.
Yeah.
Not necessarily memorizing and spitting it back out, but how to learn. And, I mean, that's what I wish for every child, you know, in every school district, you know, in the country and in the world, is and they learn to love to learn. And I just think that's, you know, I've often thought I should go back into teaching after having set kids through Wycliffe because you see what's
possible. My dear friend Maureen Reedy, who was the Ohio State Teacher of the Year, and you probably know, is in Wycliffe as, I think, a resource teacher now. It's a fabulous school.
I'm sorry, I just cut somebody off, but we are running out of time. It has been a great talk today with Mimi Chenfeld, my first of many, I hope. You have been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.